It's still doing it. It was, you know, Sub Rosa. It wasn't until 1949 that a Chinese person could actually own property in California.
What? That late, huh?
Yeah. 1949.
Wow. Well, statutory or just the fact that, wow.
They had to change a law.
A citizen of Chinese descent?
Any non-white, U.S. citizen of Chinese descent in California could not legally own real property until 49.
Yeah.
Now, they around that for years and years. You know, they'd hire a surrogate, usually their lawyer, who's Caucasian, and he'd hold the title.
Oh, okay.
And all that. It was never really theirs, they felt.
Well,
I think Earl Warren got that changed when he was governor, right before he went on the Supreme Court.
Really hard to believe.
Isn't that amazing? And even into the 50s, people in Palo Alto wouldn't sell to non-whites. But Eichler said, hey, I'm going to make a buck here.
Yeah.
If they can afford that, you know, if they can get qualified for the loan, they can live here.
Well, now you look in the paper, the in house sales, and there's Chinese names all down the list.
Absolutely.
moving into Palo Alto.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Large Asian population. And even Atherton is changing now. A lot more Chinese and names in the Atherton home. Of course, the old families sniff at that, but what the heck? Life moves on.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay. Just a few questions for you.
Yeah,
you know, Tim's put together some good background on
maybe we should just start on both of you guys on where you live, what you do, and whether you held the office, any kind of city, county, elected office before. Just start that.
Okay. I live in San Carlos. I work at Yahoo in Sunnyvale as a software engineer, and I've never held any office before.
Okay. Well, no, you've been around since 58.
Been around.
Well, I mean, you said you've been in the area.
Well, I was raised in Berkeley and came down here in 63 to go to Stanford. Okay. Stuck around ever since.
Okay. And what do you do?
My wife, 36 years last month, and she met her at Stanford. And we raised two kids there. They both went to school there too. I got a master's in civil engineering from there, and later went back and got one in education. And I was a civil engineer for a while. I led the Young Life work on the peninsula, and then went back to be a teacher. And I taught public private high schools. And in 1991, my wife and I helped start the King Academy. It's a Christian high school, private high school in Sunnyvale, where I was this morning. With 735 kids now, grew.
Very nice.
Doing very nicely. It's fun. And I like my job. And the kids grew up. Moved out. And I told them.
Are you still a teacher? Or,
when you told them, though?
You told them every day.
See you later.
Go to college, get a job, move out.
So you said that you and your started that school?
Yeah, along with about six other couples.
Uh-huh.
Interesting.
Yeah. And you still work there as a teacher, or are you more an administrator?
I do a lot of administrative work, and you know, we feel like we own the place, so and so we just pour everything into that.
And what's the name of the school again?
The King's Academy, K-N-G-F,
King's Academy,
yes,
it's a Christian private school.
Yeah.
Okay, and have you ever run for city council, planning commission in Palo Alto?
None of those things. I got fairly worked up and ran for Congress, the same seat in 1998. And I thought I had learned my lesson.
You just couldn't help yourself.
I was happy some other guys were doing that the last couple times, but and this time we're looking at things.
All right. You mentioned Young Life. Their offices are right on El Camino, about a block and a half from my house. I live over.
You live right there?
Barron Park.
No kidding.
Yeah.
So what can you do in state office that you can't do holding a local office?
Federal office, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Well, let me put it this way. Let's try this. If you get elected, what's your number one top priority?
My top priority would be to vote against anything that's that isn't within the constitutional powers of the Congress. So, the list is too long to go into, but you could just turn it around and look at Article 1, Section 8 and see that the federal government has the authority to do things like the military, the post office, patents, copyright, stuff like this, and I would pretty much adhere to those lists.
Yeah, the 10th Amendment leaves most jobs that the federal government's doing right now with the states, and they just strip them. I think when Brian and I have met together in a couple debates, and we talked yesterday, had a nice discussion with another paper, and I think our hearts are somewhere in the same spot we're coming from for why we're running, is that we perceive that we're represented by a representative that is not doing what she's supposed to be doing, and we see as citizens, we got to do something about that, and we certainly would vote for somebody that would do the right things, but we didn't see anybody coming to the plate for that, so we got carried away here and stepped up our system.
I think the first thing I would do, maybe, if I were going to introduce any legislation at all, you know, although anything, if I were, it would have no chance of passage probably, but I'd like to see Social Security checks get printed in colors. You know, black if you still haven't gotten back everything that you paid in plus interest and inflation, and red if you are now, you know, O-line and now are, you know, living off of your grandkids dying. And I think that would maybe move this whole entitlements debate just maybe a bit, because it seems like, you know, nothing else is doing the job. I mean, USAID comes out of the big analysis saying that each family owes $500,000 in unfunded, you know, entitlement liabilities and government debt, and but we don't see any reflection of that in the political discussion.
Mm. I forgot to ask you about your political affiliations, both of you.
Oh. I'm libertarian.
And I'm with the Republican Party.
Okay.
I'm a recovered Republican myself. Actually.
Did you have to go undercover to be here today?
I'm a fairly libertarian kind of Republican.
I thought they had a checkpoint, didn't they? All the demo politicians in this county had a checkpoint.
Well, you know, we're pretty excited about this thing because the 64% of the people who voted for governor in the recall voted for Republicans.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So that just gave us all sort of energy here.
What happened when you ran in 98? How did you do?
Oh, I guess I got about 30% of the vote, pretty close.
30%?
Yeah.
Wow, that's not bad.
Well, there's a lot of people that will vote R, because there's an R after my name. There's mm-hmm. people who vote D, because there's a D after Anna Issue's name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the district just to the north of here, there was a...
No more thinking than that.
Exactly. There was a guy who ran as a libertarian against Lantos. Got like 4% of the vote. Then the next cycle, he ran against Lantos as a Republican. Got like 25% of the vote.
Yeah.
Same platform, same name, same everything. So.
But still, you'd be running as a Libertarian.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm running as a Libertarian.
Are you active in the local party here?
I've been active for like the last 2 years. Okay. Yeah, 3 years now.
Yeah. And I was elected. I can't even keep track of it. About a year ago to the Republican Central Committee in Santa Clara County.
Okay.
I didn't really care when, a couple years ago.
Well, that's good. One of the issues is, you know, issues totally entrenched.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an interesting word, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Is that the way it's supposed to be?
Well, not necessarily, but, I'm just looking at what it is
What makes her entrenched? Lots of money. Uh-huh. Lots of money, so she's virtually assured of going back every single time. And is that because people really know what she stands for and how she has voted, and decides that's the way they want the country to go? I think I would maintain they don't know.
Mm-hmm. I think they're you know, knee-jerk. There's a lot of people who are knee-jerk Democrats, a lot of people who are knee-jerk Republicans, and who don't look at what the two parties, you know, how they compare and whether there's an obvious alternative, or whether they should use their vote to send a message, you know, to the existing entrenched establishment. Mm-hmm.
But can either U.S. candidates who've never held smaller office, I mean, Anna Eshoo came up through the ranks, you mm-hmm. know, mm-hmm. she's a supervisor here for 10 years in this county.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think she held lower offices than that as well.
She held city council, and then a supervisor, and then
she was aide to some state legislature.
She worked for the state Democrat Party.
Right. Mm-hmm. So she's been in politics for decades here. Now she's at the top, spending $600,000 on each campaign. Can you guys, either of you, mount a real challenge to her?
Oh, we can't spend that kind of money.
How much are you spending on campaigns?
I don't even know what it's going to come to. Somewhere in the neighborhood of $50,000.
How much?
$50,000, somewhere mm-hmm. in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. The there's just no way you can pull that off.
Yeah, I've pledged myself that I'll spend up to $5,000, you know, just to stay under the reporting limit. In fact, I issued a little challenge to the voters in the district, and you know that I'll pay them $2 not to vote for me.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah. So so far, actually, I haven't had any takers. So
$2 to not vote for you?
Yeah. So if they can evaluate my positions and pass a little quiz to prove that they read them, and then still say they won't vote for me, then $2 is there. So, but I'm having trouble giving away this money.
Vote for you.
Huh?
Either a lot of people checking it out and are going to vote for you, or
well, I get about 30 visitors a day to the website, so I'm going to have to actually, I think, raise the amount of money. Cause, you know, I want to give away at least some of this money. So, so next week, maybe look for a press release about up in the ante on this. But
cash in all those $2 bills.
Yeah, yeah. Well, also, you know, easier if I give away more because $2 bills are maybe hard to get. So.
Yeah, fives are easier.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But you haven't much response to that.
I've only gotten donations for, as a result of this thing. I'm trying to get any way, and instead I've gotten some donations. So it's not, the plan's not working. Yeah. Either that or these people are looking at it, and, okay, I'm going to vote for them. And then,
do you think there's a purpose in running, in your kind of situation, where you have the entrenched person with a ton of money and all that, do you think there's a purpose beyond trying to get elected?
Oh, I think it's
running in a race like that.
It's in the records show, you know, that letting people, you know, use their vote for what it's in it, which is to express their beliefs, you know, at the polling place.
And people's choice.
Yeah, I mean, it's not about, you know, being on the winning team, you know, in sports or something. It's about, you know, standing up for what you believe. And so if there weren't, an option on the ballot to let people, you know, stand up for the idea that, you know, Democrats are, you know, the left wing is half wrong and the right wing is half wrong, and there's an alternative that binds the best of both, then, you know, if that option weren't there, then, you know, I don't know what a person like me would do. Maybe I would vote for neither, or I'm not sure. So.
Well, it sort of disenfranchise you in a way.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can't have everybody on the ballot, but people's views do come into clumps, and I think there's actually an awful big clump related to people who are, you know, fiscally conservative and socially liberal. It's just that the two parties haven't quite, you know, wrapped their heads around that yet. So until they do, the Libertarian Party is going to be, I think, holding that higher.
Do you ever talk to T.J. Rogers of Cypress Semiconductor?
You know, I'm thinking of trying to contact him. I heard a quote from him that he would vote Libertarian if they had a sane candidate. And, I hope I qualify as sane. Mm-hmm. So
send him your photo. Hold a copy of one of Ayn Rand's books.
The Randroids are a little kind of, you know, an interesting breed in and of themselves, and I'm not one. So, but they're definitely, you know, sympathizers.
Yeah. Is that sort of what you're looking at? Raise awareness?
Raise awareness and provide a chance for somebody.
Okay.
I mean, all my friends are very frustrated that that everybody on their ballot, well, who's representing them right now, Barbara Boxer is off the charts out there. And if they knew Anna Eshoo's record, they'd recognize that she's way out there, too.
What do you specifically object to in her voting record, or what would you do differently?
Well, if you look at just a couple things, I broke down three areas of education because I can remember, and they all started with the Texas terrorism and teachers.
Okay.
But the on the education thing, I'm a teacher, and I've been looking at education for quite some years. We homeschooled our kids for 7 years to do a better job with them, and we started a school specifically to do a better job with kids. But this is with a bunch of parents and teachers getting really involved with kids and making all the decisions that are made. But California is a mess right now because we've taken all that to Sacramento. And out of the hands of school boards can still decide who's the contractor for the gyms
right.
going to be. But on a lot of decisions, you know, what kind of textbooks we're going to have and what the curriculum's going to be and a whole bunch of rules that you have to go by are dictated out of Sacramento. And now the move definitely is to move that to Washington, D.C., the one-size-fits-all thing throughout the country. And just on the face of that, it ought to get every teacher, every parent worked up.
Mm-hmm.
It's nonsense, and it's contrary to the Constitution. That they try to find out what the Constitution said the federal government should do. And it's wasteful of money, and it's really un-American that one curriculum would be taught about the whole country, which is where it's leading. And they do a lousy job with Washington, D.C., which they have control of. So this is what Anna's votes consistently have been, to move it in that direction. And she's tied in with the NEA, whatever they say, she'll do. She even denied the kids in Washington, D.C., failing schools whose parents wanted vouchers to move to a different school. She even denied that a couple times.
Okay, what about the other issues?
Well, taxes is one that's very consistent to see. I got woken up, really, in 1993 when she got into office, because the Mercury News used to publish how people voted. I sure wish the newspapers would do that. I asked our local newspaper, the Palo Alto Weekly, if they'd do that back in 93 or so, and the guy just looked at me and said, "You have an agenda here, don't you?"
Well, I think, you know, we've talked about doing that. Here on, like, if we write a story or pick up a wire story on a major, on something. Yeah. So let's take, for example, some home, revising the Homeland Security thing, all right? Then why shouldn't we, you know, run how the local people voted?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it makes perfect sense. And, you know, I think to a large degree, for us, I know it's true, that it's a matter of taking the time to do it.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Small group of people, mm-hmm. you know, with 10,000 things to do.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal, but it is one more thing.
Well, also structure the votes such that, you know, no matter what the topic is, they have an affinity to vote both ways on it. You know, so if she didn't vote for that bill, she'll say she voted for an amendment that does whatever it is the people standing up here wanted to have done. Mm-hmm. So so the, you know, Congress people, I think it's almost a losing proposition to try to you know, go after an incumbent on the record, because they're always going to be able to pull 7 votes out of their pocket that they voted, you know, some way on that sounds good. So that's why I think you just have to look at the big picture of what they and what their party is trying to do and where they stand on the political spectrum. Okay. And if you look at it that way,
I agree with you on that they can't look at their record for things. My goodness,
you could try, but you're going to get a lot of smoke screen coming back, I think.
Yeah, well, you seem like you sort of want to burn down the house in a way.
Yeah,
both of you sound like you sort of want to burn down the house and start over.
I would.
You're a tyrant.
Yeah.
A given.
No.
Clean sheet of paper. Yeah.
Yeah. Now that sounds like, don't use that
to describe you.
You got to do common sense stuff, and you got to start with where we're at.
Yes.
I mean, we're a big mess here right now, but to completely just do away with the Department of Education should never have been started in the first place. But to completely do away with it, it's going to cause a lot of havoc. But I'd be excited about being there and looking into the programs that they have going on there, and there is definitely some big-time waste going on. They don't even know how much money they're spending in vast areas of it, and the budget's increasing like crazy, and it's not getting us anywhere. So there's some things you can do there, but, you know, burn the house down sounds worse.
Yeah, I mean, you look at where we want the country to be, you know, 10, 20, 30 years, and what we want the finances of our children's generation to look like. And then you work backwards from there. And if there's pushback on that that says that, you know, oh, there's going to be a little dislocation in the meantime thing, that's a lousy argument for saying that we should never get to make things be the way they should be.
Mm-hmm. Sort of like cancer treatment. You know, the chemotherapy makes you even sicker than mm-hmm. you were in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
But it very well could make you better or cure the cancer or whatever in the end.
Mm-hmm.
But her record on taxes has really been consistent.
Reason?
She just recently voted last week or so, a week or two ago. She voted for a vote that would get rid of the marriage penalty. You know, where it mm-hmm. cost me an extra $1,100 to be married.
I saw you from that. You don't care about
that. Something?
I wouldn't know. Yeah,
that really doesn't encourage that kind of behavior.
Yeah.
But this is the first time that I could find that she voted to get rid of that marriage penalty thing, and I think it's just because it was just before election. But all the other times she's been for everything that comes up, And it's when I first noticed that, it was for some stuff that really hurt my family. You know, really was. Every $1 billion cost every single one of us $3, and so you start adding up some billions and billions there, and you know, as the guy said, appreciate you're talking about real money.
Let me ask this: in terms of money, Bush and the congressional Republicans, tax cuts,
yeah,
okay,
yeah,
And by most of what I've read, the actual number of dollars they put in my pocket or my wife's pocket was relatively small, but created a huge deficit or increase. You know, maybe it was balanced in Bitcoin, maybe it wasn't. You know, it's all accounting. So, what do you guys think?
Well, you know, I was a Republican up until the Bush and the Republicans actually took over all three houses of Congress. And when that happened, I thought that they would deliver on their promise of shrinking government. And I no longer had an excuse of saying, well, it's the Democrats in this House of Congress or that House of Congress or over there in the White House who are causing all the trouble. So when my excuse went away and these guys started increasing spending rather than decreasing it, that's when I left. And and if you look at, you know, the Cato Institute has got good numbers on this. You know, Bush's spending has been worse than the Democrat than under the Democrats. So yeah, he's got some taxes and that's nice. But if you don't cut the spending, all that, you know, that's just bad. As you know, the Democrats pile unfunded liabilities on my children and what will hopefully be my grandchildren. Bush with his unfunded tax cuts. Not balanced by spending cuts, he's putting, you know, debt on my kids. So either way, it's a bad situation.
Yeah. When I ran in 98, I was thinking I would run as a Republican, so I went and read the platform to make sure. And the platform looked good. And they've revised it a little bit here and there since. It still looks good. They're not doing it. You know, to increase the size of the education budget is not in the platform, and that kind of spending is not in the platform. There's some other factors at work there. I would have voted no on the No Child Left Behind bill, and have voted no on it, but for different reasons.
Why would you have voted against that?
Well, because it's more federal involvement in education. It's more federal manipulating of education. And California gets about 7% of their school funding comes from the federal government, but along with that comes 50% of the red tape that schools have to deal with.
Brigham Young University solved that problem. They don't take a penny.
Yeah. There's two others, Grove City and Hillsdale College, that don't do that too. But that's what should happen. That's what happens. You get a little bit of money and a lot of control.
They even have to check out the research grants. From supposedly private sources to make sure there are no ties to the federal government because it's a flow through.
With it comes all the tentacles. So I would have voted no on it because of that, and it's unconstitutional spending, although it doesn't seem to bother a lot of people right now. We seem to think that's important.
I too looked at the Republican platform, and my take on, you know, as social liberal, my take on the Republicans was always that they had some their share of bad ideas, you know, on abortion, on the war on drugs, but they've been not good at implementing their worst ideas. The Democrats are very good at implementing their worst ideas. Yeah, I mean, you look at there's like 6-0 Republican appointed justices on the Supreme Court. And yet Roe v. Wade to the law of the land. So I was willing to bite the bullet and hold my nose on the social issues with the Republicans. But then when they got total of Washington, they showed their apparent true colors. And so and there were things that, so not only on the social issues with, you know, reproductive rights and the war on drugs, but also, you know, I just debated this with my brother the other day, a Mississippi Republican, and pointed out that, you know, Bush was pushing the prescription drug plan, the giveaway to seats in the 2000 platform. It wasn't any kind of, you know, response to 9/11, trying to cover his domestic flank so he could defend the country. I mean, it was just a conscious decision to try to out-Democrat the Democrats, and that's why I left the party.
So specifically back to Anna Eshoo, do you just see her as part of a bad trend in our government, or do you see her as a particularly odious figure in our government? Or
I don't think she's particularly odious. She's, you know, caught a good headline recently for her work on the expensing of stock options. I think it's kind of odd that they decided that the top five executives in a company, those stock options have to be expensed, but the others don't. I mean, if you can figure out what the expense of a stock option is, it ought to be expensed. The fact is that it's hard to calculate them. you know, even if you use like black holes formula or something. So
how about you expense it, but eliminate? No, you don't expense it, but eliminate the benefit of the. They get it both ways, is what a lot of people are saying.
Who gets both?
Well, the companies that issue stock options. Okay, mm-hmm. They don't have to expense it, but they still take a tax deduction.
A deduction for stock options?
Yeah. They get a tax benefit based on the current stock option system.
I am not sure that. I'd have to double check that, because it seems like if there were a tax advantage to that form of compensation, then they would try to switch all the compensation from salary, which is taxed real high, to stock options.
But the stock brokers are all happy. We've got to trade every week.
But I agree with our CFO at Yahoo told us, which is that you know, each company is required to disclose their current outstanding stock options situation. And Wall Street, you know, has got a lot of guys who spend a lot of time staring at those footnotes, and they build that into the current price of the stock. And so this expensing thing would just change, you know, the bottom, you know, a number on this line of the financial report. But it really shouldn't, if market theory is correct and people are evaluating all the information, it really shouldn't change people's evaluation of the stocks anyway. So.
So that's not a real huge issue here, and there's not certainly one of contention here, probably with her. But the third one is just a whole issue of national defense. I mean, I would think that it's got to be right there at the top issue in the whole country, or probably the top one. And that's as a federal responsibility, that's number one. That's the federal government's most important job. And Anna's record on that, she's on the Intelligence Committee now. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Her education of an AA degree from Kenyatta College. And I don't know why she's on the Intelligence Committee. She's made hay from that position of doing make it politicized. She's going on television, all her town meetings. She's bashing Bush with the stuff she has in intelligence. So and that's all I've seen happening there. But her record throughout the whole time she's been in Congress has been just about every single opportunity to vote against the Department of Defense funding, even when it involved pay raise for troops and mm-hmm. and so I mean it's just really been a very consistent record and to cut the intelligence budget, to have the intelligence budget be laid open here. I'm sure there were some reasons to have some of it secret.
Yeah, Anna's a nice lady, and I don't necessarily complain with her individual actions. My main complaint with her is that when she goes into the next Congress, she's going to vote for the current Democratic leadership. Mm-hmm. And if Chris got elected to Congress, his first day, he'd be required to vote for the current Republican leadership. And I think that's the problem is that the entrenched leadership of both parties in Washington, you know, have got this system set up where, you know, they have a shell game going on. They tax you to buy votes from your neighbor. They tax your neighbor to buy votes from you, and they hope that you won't catch on. And so I just have thrown up my hands with it, and I'm going to say that I'm not going to vote for either of these two, you know, evils.
Do you guys have any specific qualms with the way she represented your area, you know, your geographic area that you're from?
I do. She brags about bringing you know, special benefits to our area. They're kind of, you know, maybe meager sounding, you know, fighting fungus up in the mountains or keeping
Children's Library in Palo Alto.
Keeping the something rescue wing at Moffitt. But I, for one, wouldn't be bragging about that kind of stuff at all. I think that the government's job is to look at national issues and do what's right for the country as a whole. And if instead, you know, the 14th district is trying to squeeze money out of the other 434 districts in the country, I think that's wrong. And I think, you know, we're a rich enough country and this is a rich enough area that we can, you know, pull our own weight, and we shouldn't have all the districts trying to you know, put their hands in the pot and see who can pull out the most money, this is the quickest.
Well, that was one of the things that drove up spending when the Republicans finally did take over, you know, Congress and the White House. Mm-hmm. They went on a binge, really.
Oh, yeah.
It's our turn now, is what they seem to be saying. Mm-hmm. I mean, what were some of the examples? A swimming pool in Fort Nevada, and, you know, for a community group thing and all that, and even certainly larger things mm-hmm. In many places. And yet the Republicans had often said, this is wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, we are the party that was conservative on spending, but they just sort of went hog wild.
Exactly.
It is wrong. Yeah. And the Republicans say it's wrong, but I think one of the things that happens here is that it's career politicians that make it happen. And I don't think that's the way it was intended to be. You're supposed to have some citizen who goes back and serves for 4 or 6 years and then comes back as a citizen. But if you're working for as a career politician, you have to keep building and feathering your nest and getting the contacts and building your career and getting more connections like that. And I think you go back there, Tom Colburn is running for Senate in Oklahoma right now. He's one of that class of 94 that did stay there for just 6 years. And as a result of that, he knew he was leaving and coming back being a doctor. And so the last couple of years he was there, every time there was an appropriations bill come along, he put amendments on it to get out some of that pork barrel spending and called a question on it. And sure enough, he got stomped on by the leadership. But that's what we need is people like that.
Yeah, as far as politicians go, and career politicians, I'm kind of a contrarian on both the notion of politicians and on public service. I think, people badmouth politicians, but politicians just do what voters want them to do. So anyone who's complaining about politicians should really complain about voters. And on the other hand, this notion of public service as being this altruistic, wonderful thing, I haven't done any public service. You know, public service basically, there's like you can join the Red Cross, you can do things like that. But when you hold public office, the main difference, what distinguishes it from other endeavors, is that you have the power to control men with guns, men who can go out and shoot you if you don't do what we say. And that's a very dangerous power. And in fact, in the history of humankind, most of the harm that's been done has been, by people who hold that power, who are acting in what they think has been the common good. So when people have a long service of public service, a long record, I take that with a grain of salt, and I think that's the most dangerous power to hold. Mm-hmm. And I would be I think we should be really skeptical of people who have the instinct to want to hold that power. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, politicians they're not liars, they are sincere. It's just that there's a lot of people who have a lot of different principles. And I think it's very easy to be seduced into saying and doing things that can get you votes from certain people. So I think you've got to look past the politicians and have the voters look in the mirror.
Don't you have to play that game, though, if you're going to be up in that kind of office?
Maybe. Well, I know I'm not going to be in that kind of office, so it could very well be true that you do have to compromise that way. But if people are looking to vote for a compromiser, then they shouldn't vote for me.
What about the war? The war in Iraq. Did you support it?
I supported it at the time, but not for the reasons that Bush was talking about. And in fact, I'm glad that they didn't find any WMDs in there, because I don't think there was much evidence that Saddam was about to do anything in Manhattan or the mall in D.C. I think instead the thing to look at him was his record of invading one country, annexing another, firing ballistic missiles at two others, pursuing a nuclear weapons program, defying UN Security Council resolutions to disarm. So this was a guy that, just as a humanitarian mission, it was worthwhile to depose him, especially since you look at the examples we had in Kurdistan, where now for 13 or 14 years there's been a stable and prosperous region. Mm-hmm. under protection of the U.S. military. Mm-hmm. And Afghanistan, after that was liberated, they're doing actually pretty well stability-wise now. So I think there were grounds for optimism. Now, it could be that the Iraqi people are going to turn out not to have been very ready for this opportunity, but I think just in the name of human freedom, it was worth a try. And I'm glad that by not getting WMDs, Bush is at least forced to pay lip service to the idea of liberty and freedom, rather than trying to scare us into thinking that Saddam was about to pull a trick on us. Now that we're in it, there's really not much difference, I think, in how different people say we should go about getting out, leaving a stable situation behind. I think the thing to put our lights on now are the potential for nuclear devices being developed in Iran and Pakistan, because if one of those ever gets into the hands of the wrong people, then 9/11 is going to look like a party.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting you said the war, and then a few seconds later you said Iraq. Mm-hmm. And the war is bigger than that. The war, we've been declared war on by Osama bin Laden in 1998, and we've been attacked since, well, 1993, before that, since then, several times. And this is not something to forget about and get focused on one part of the thing. But these guys do have this intent to completely wipe us out.
When you say these guys, who do you mean?
Whoever they are, Osama bin Laden and other Islamic fundamentalist radicals.
Do you put Saddam Hussein in that group? Or?
Well, yeah, I don't know quite where he fits into that whole thing. But
the Ba'athists were actually a secular party.
But the notion about how it works with those guys, it's a complete control over their people, and it's through force, it's through some ideas that are entirely antithetical to ours, and you have to have an enemy. We were the enemy for both these guys and for Saddam Hussein, and Bush gets himself in a spot here where he's got to do something, and he really did need to do something. Clinton's not doing something as 9/11. And they didn't expect Bush to actually, they did not expect the United States even to respond to something like that. And the way Bush responded by going after him in Afghanistan and really changed the whole tide of the thing, on avant garde.
But Iraq isn't.
Yeah. What?
Iraq is separate.
Yeah, I think 9/11, you know, they found a hole in our defense. That hole got closed in about 30 or 45 minutes with some cell phone calls. The guys on Flight 93 took things in their own hands.
Right.
And to the situation, they're not gonna. I don't think they're gonna find another hole like that in our defenses.
See, what I'm saying is,
they're in our defenses.
There's a distinction between Osama bin Laden and the radical terrorists and government of Saddam Hussein.
Right.
Iraq.
Because that was Hussein's government was not someone who had threatened, nor were they a fundamentalist Islamic state.
Now, as bad as they were.
As hostile as they might have been to us in ideology or...
Right, I would put taking down Saddam in the same category as, like, maybe, you know, we should have intervened in Rwanda and saved a few million lives there, you know, or what we did in Kosovo, you know, to stop ethnic cleansing there. I mean...
I don't know what you're saying, what information you're working with, but we said Saddam wasn't intending to get us.
Well, you saw what came out today, is that he had no nuclear weapons program.
Yep.
And
Saddam had tried an assassination attempt on Bush Sr.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the idea is there in his mind, you know, to go after us. We are the big enemy to him as well as we are to the... We're a favorite target by Muslims that want to stir up the pot there. And we're hearing different things on every day here, and we will until the election, especially about different tie-ins with different people. Saddam had a training terrorists with an airplane inside of what's the name of that place?
In Iraq, you mean?
Yeah, in Iraq. They had a. He has been tied with even training terrorist groups, and he has pulled all this other stuff. With shooting things at Israel and he did have anthrax things going on, even things that he had used and the
his mustard gas on the Kurds
and all stuff and we're having trouble even from our point of view. That I'm sure the intelligence committee is getting the straight scoop on the best things information they know about these things in the CIA, but that's not getting to you and me.
Mm.
You know, we're getting what we hear with the latest stuff. There was stuff on CNN's news service Monday that said that they found weapons of mass destruction. They found anthrax and saw pictures of a truck that had a mobile lab. CNN's news service said they had memos from internal memos from Iraq translated was talking about connections with Al-Qaeda. We're going to hear these things from different sources, and I'm not sure they're working the straight scoop on there. But the thing did boil down to back then when Bush attacked there, that we've got these guys that have led the UN for so long here, and his information that he got led him to two choices that is the danger look bad enough so we should go stop it before it happens, or should we wait and see what happens? And he's got to weigh all that stuff, and that's a terrible job to have.
A terrible decision to have to make.
And I'm not going to come by and Monday morning quarterback on him on it too much, especially right before the election. I've talked to five soldiers that I run into at the county fairs. The guy just walking by and had a soldier's cap on and just came back from Iraq. And I said, did you just come back from Iraq? And he said, yeah. And I said, tell me something. Tell me anything. And they didn't even know what I was going to ask for, but just tell me anything. And the guy said he was a Democrat, but he went over there not knowing why he was going. But when he got over there, now he knows why he went.
Mm-hmm.
And he would vote for Bush in a second. He said, we were really doing important stuff there.
I think it's been underreported, the efforts.
I don't know.
To rebuild effort. Yeah. I think that's been
very
underreported.
It's been rather slow.
Interesting.
Yeah, even if it is slow, you know.
Yeah, there are.
You know, one explosion, you know, is going to be more, you know,
yeah,
interesting.
Yeah,
than
that's right.
All of this.
Yeah. No, I think that part.
A neighbor of ours in Palo Alto, Williamson Evers, Bill Evers,
mm-hmm.
He was on the Hoover Institution guy, and Bush sent him over to be in charge of the whole education rebuilding, the education system in Iraq, and he's back now. He's running for county school board in Santa Clara.
I'll be done.
He learned some things over in Iraq he's going to try here.
Okay, one more thing on the Middle Eastern terrorism, and then we can move along and maybe wrap it up so
yeah.
We can all go back to doing what we're supposed to here. Do you think that there's too much emphasis put? No, that's a bad question. Never mind.
Okay.
I used to, you know, when right after September 11th, you know, people were going out and beating up on Muslims or people they perceived to be Muslim and all that. And I thought about that and I said, well, gee whiz, you look at Timothy McVeigh, who was a terrorist.
Mm-hmm.
And here he was a Caucasian Christian who decorated a Gulf War veteran, the first Gulf War. And he went up and blew up, you know, killed hundreds of people and all that. But gee, I never once did think about going out and punching out a Lutheran minister, you know,
right,
in retaliation for that.
Is he doing something? Yeah, I hadn't heard him be called a Christian before. Was there something in his ideology?
Oh, no, it wasn't necessarily ideology, Christian ideology, that drove him.
It was just a matter of profile.
That's how he was raised?
A profile of him. So nobody went out and like, punched out a Lutheran minister or said it's all because of the veterans or something like that.
I think some of the, I mean, we were all concerned about racial profiling, too.
Yeah.
We got PC hitting us from all angles here, and that makes a lot of things more difficult. But every one of those 19 guys was a young Arab Muslim
Saudi
man.
Saudi Arabia. Saudi. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Young Muslim male. young Muslim male would be three words you could apply to the World Trade Center bombings in 93, the coal bombings, seemed to show up a lot right there.
Yeah, but there's about
and also
you know, 400
to America's,
million.
You know, closest allies in the petroleum industry.
And is there something in the ideology that's making this happen? And we've heard it is really something to see a guy stand there beheading an American on the video. And it's really something to see, there's 15, 16, 17 conflicts going on in the world right now?
Yeah.
The thing that I'd like to hear answered, you know,
stuff going on.
You know, the current stock Republican answer is, you know, better to fight them, you know, in Iraq than here. And I think most of the people who are fighting in Iraq, you know, really care more about Iraq or about, you know, Sunni ethnic power and Shia ethnic power than they do about you know,
wiping out the Western
wiping movements. Exactly, yeah. So
they're killing all the guys that are volunteering to be Iraqi policemen.
Yeah. So I think they should, you know, we should look real hard at Rumsfeld's question from a year or two back, which is, you know, every day are we killing and capturing more of these guys than we're creating? And I do think that if we can make Iraq turn out to be a stable thing, then it will go quite a ways towards refuting the idea that we're over there for oil or that we're over there to you know, Christianize the nation or anything. I think that would be a great outcome. There's still going to be people, you know, on the fringe who are going to hate us no matter what. And, you know, you can only go so far towards convincing these people.
I find it fascinating that Bin Laden and his group made a great number of references to much of their work being payback for the Crusades, you know, the Christian Crusades, four centuries ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, they can hold a grudge.
Eight or nine centuries ago. I think those things were like around 1200 or so.
That was particularly true, I think, in the Barcelona bombing.
Mm.
You know, when they made some very blunt statements about that.
And it didn't help
when the Moors out in 15-something or other, and now we're paying them.
And it didn't help when Bush used the crusade word to describe our effort to
I think they got him to drop that fairly quickly.
Yeah, I think they gave him a little quick lesson after that.
I don't know how much, it's almost as forbidden to even discuss this area of thing here, because you're opening up a can of worms. But the Muslim world first started with the pretty violent stuff. Muhammad in 600, walking around, they had a great deal. They got people that, they told people that who were under the Constantinople Eastern Orthodox Church rule, which caused them to pay taxes and do all sorts of things. They said, we'll offer you a good deal here. You can get out from the taxes, and also you can continue living. And we won't chop off your head. And it was an unbeatable evangelistic technique.
Actually,
they spread like crazy.
If you look at that empire, the early Muslim empire that the early Muslim conquest created, it was actually one of the most tolerant of its day, and there was an actual flowering of you know, of science and literature, and Jews in fact would flock to it because they were much more tolerant towards other religions than the Christian lands at the time.
The Ottoman Empire.
Yeah, exactly.
Had a policy of tolerance towards the Jews. In fact, Constantinople
Well, something's changed.
It's only been the last 150 years or so that there's been this kind of backlash, and I mean, it's probably related maybe to, you know, seeing the relative, you know, advances of different, you know, cultures and societies, and you know, there's always, when people feel threatened, they're always going to retract back to their, you know, to their fundamentalist beliefs. But
I've always found that interesting that there were societies that actually where different beliefs, which also have many common roots, could actually exist and be tolerant of each other and accept each other.
Mm-hmm.
But in modern times, it's much more difficult and much more fragmented. You know? So if you took the historical example, we'd be better off rather than looking at current policies or whatever. So one of the few things I would say, let's do turn the clock back on.
Yeah, well, it's easy to be pessimistic, but I mean, like your example of, you know, Californians and property rights, you know, from only 50 years ago, I think it's easy to lose sight of how, I'm fundamentally an optimist. I think that things are now, you know, all in all better than they've ever been, and the path is going to just keep going up. And it's just a question of, you know, can we move forward, you know, in a smart way and make things better even faster, or can, you know, or do we have to let history teach us a few more, you know, tough lessons?
Have you read the Da Vinci Code?
No.
That's a point made in that novel.
Hmm.
That now people are in a better position to think for themselves than in the past, and therefore these various things should happen or whatever, you know. And that possibly could be because of the fragmentation, even cynicism about institutions and things like that. People are showing greater capacity for critical thinking.
Yeah.
Critical thinking, you know, can take you in a lot of different directions.
Mm-hmm.
You know. But that's a point made in that book.
It's okay. Yeah. It's an old point.
Yeah.
That's a point made in the 1933 Humanist Manifesto.
And is that right?
In the 1973 Humanist Manifesto, too, they start off by saying, events since then have caused us to take a second look at the optimism.
Huh.
You know, there's been Hitler
yeah.
in the most advanced philosophical country in the world.
That's true.
Come up with that.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point. Germany really is one of the most advanced.
In what evil lurks in the heart of man, only the shadow knows. There's something there that the governments, our founding fathers said the government's got to put some restraints on, some controls. Got to have a police force because there is some evil in the hearts of men.
Absolutely. In fact, even though I'm fundamentally an optimist, I think that the way you've got to design your government institutions is you've got to assume the worst intentions. You know, if we trusted our leaders to be good, then let's just have a monarchy pick, you know, the best one. I don't care.
Guys, that's most good.
And let them run it.
They said that you got to have enough government to control the evil that lurks in the hearts of the people. But then the people that you put in the government are people too. And you got to have some restraints on them.
Yeah, you have to design it assuming that they're going to try every dirty thing they can think of, and you have to build the system with the checks and balances and countermeasures and to limit what damage they can do.
And a career politician is going to, this is the nature of the beast, inevitably going to take more and more power. And that's our job as voters and as newspapers to call them on it mm-hmm. and hold them to what they promised.
Exactly the point. No, that's a point journalists often make. Mm-hmm. That, no, it is our job to poke around and hold them and make them accountable. And
absolutely. The marketplace of ideas is the number one thing we have going for us to you know, advance the cause of freedom. And so that's why, you know, a healthy, skeptical, you know, journalistic industry is you know, the number one. That's why it's amendment number one, not 8 or 9.
Yeah, you gotta have some other sources besides Dan Rather, too.
Yeah, well,
the media
exposed. That's right, and their market share has probably taken a beating, too.
You know, what's intriguing one about the Islam thing, the Al-Qari, that isn't that the guy who's Al-Qari, the guy who cut off the heads?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was doing the job on this Alexander guy a couple weeks ago or something, and so he's making a speech beforehand, and the New York Times says, he said, "You dog President Bush." And that's what the New York Times said he said. And Lee Rogers yesterday morning, he's on KSFO, mm-hmm. that's a conservative, he said that what the translation said that they left off was, "You Christian dog, George W. Bush." Mm-hmm. And see, so in his mind, as he cuts off this guy's head, and they always say, "Allah be praised," at the end of the thing, this is a very religious deal to him.
I mean, I think with the terrorism, the whether they're accurate or not, they definitely use, I mean, their version or vision of their religion is at the heart of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's religious extremists of all stripes, you know. I mean, I'm an atheist, and there's been atheist extremists with...
I'm an agnostic extremist.
Okay.
Not a good way.
I don't know, and neither do you.
I can't quite decide what to do.
Are you the kind of agnostic that doesn't know or knows that you can't know?
I think I'm the kind of agnostic that doesn't know. I think other people maybe know more than I do.
Yeah, so extremists, you know, come in all flavors. And,
they do. Yeah. But as you pointed out, maybe one of the, or not maybe, but one of the jobs of government is to to keep a cap on their expression of extremism and keep it reasonable, i.e. the marketplace. Of
one definition as an extremist is anybody believes something more stronger than I do. But it's your actions that the government's got
action,
to
decide. Yeah, you know, it's
and we don't nail anybody for what they believe. We just nail them for their actions.
Properly so.
Yeah.
Except when we got hate crimes.
Yeah.
What do you say?
I'm done. And I appreciate the conversation very much.
It's been fun talking to you guys.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot.
No problem.
It was better than our last interview, wasn't it? I think our last meeting of this kind was about where to put restrooms at Pillar Point Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
We got very heated.